You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In Martin Moran's Obie Award-winning solo show called The Tricky Part, he chronicled the sexual abuse he suffered as a young boy at the hands of a camp counselor and how he was ultimately able to forgive his abuser. His current show, All the Rage, grows out of that earlier one as it explores anger, compassion, and forgiveness and asks why some people hang on to anger and others are able to let it go. It's at the Peter J. Sharp Theater on West 42nd Street until February 24th, and I'm very pleased that it brings Martin Moran to our show today. Hello, welcome back.
Thanks, Mr. Lopate, and on this day of Valentine's Day of Love, nice to talk about anger with you.
What got you thinking about the emotion of anger at this time?
Well, you know, it's funny. When I wrote The Tricky Part and then I wrote the book came out shortly thereafter, I would often, from people I really loved and from audiences in general, get the question, wow, beautiful book and interesting, but where's anger? I think you might have skipped it. And
in talkbacks especially, they were concerned.
Yes. Some people would ask, especially in sometimes those emotionally charged talkbacks right after the play. And I have to say, it struck me so deeply. I felt so many things. I felt embarrassed. I felt kind of defensive. And I thought, oh, my God, have I skipped an entire field of, you know, have I not finished the story? Like, how will I ever find redress if I haven't really examined this? So I began to ask the question.
Well, considering the great reviews, you feel you don't have much to be angry about these days?
The great reviews for All the Rage, you mean? Yeah. Thank you. You know, I was such a mystery to me how it would be received, because it's ultimately kind of a spiritual quest about, you know, how at any given moment we behave with compassion or anger and, you know, how any of us deal with being wronged. But I'm pleased, yeah, about the play's being well received.
Well, considering the stories that you've told, you probably have lots of reasons to be angry, but you don't seem to be an angry person. Are you one of those people who tends to keep his anger bottled up, or do you just let it slide off your back ultimately?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It's funny when you think, well, gee, who am I essentially or temperamentally? Am I not, you know, am I essentially that polite, you know, class president that I always used to be in high school and the pleasing Catholic boy? I think somewhere, Leonard, it had to do also with this notion of masculinity or manhood, or am I not a fully realized, powerful person because I have not uncovered my anger? And I think what I'm finding is that it's a kind of bottomless question, and that it's fluid in life. I certainly have become enraged at certain moments, and I touch on this in the play when I have a moment on the street with a cab driver, probably a common New York scene. But I thought, my God, where are these wells of rage coming from?
And this, I mean, where you suddenly start yelling at the driver, you almost hit me.
Yes, like an insane person. I mean, truly, like out of your mind. You know, and as the Buddhists say, or whatever, you know, that awareness is the key to not becoming completely enraged in a way where you really lash out and strike out in a way you regret and really hurt another person, you know, or other people, or bomb them or whatever. But in any case, I do have rage somewhere hidden in there. But I do think there's maybe this kind of practice of awareness of compassion, or awareness of, wow, that anger is coming from somewhere, and really to try to examine it. And
well, women often also have rage, but it's, I've witnessed so many instances where the man yells at the cab driver, you know, are you crazy, or whatever it is, something on the street, and woman says, stop it. They don't want that confrontation. You were talking about this to some degree is also an expression of manhood.
Well, I think culturally, I think I mentioned that because somewhere along the line, the embarrassment I felt about not confronting or sort of being questioned about my own anger touched a spot in me, perhaps as a gay man, perhaps as a this sense of not being man enough, which I have experienced as a, you know, I guess as a short guy and a and maybe a gay guy, and thinking, I'm not, you know, what if I'm, am I missing an element of power? And what is power in life? And So I don't mean that exclusively for it being a male issue, but I think it struck me in, you know, in my identity as a...
Well, did you feel that you did get more power after the tricky part, which, as you said, was also published in book form, and you came to be regarded as something of an expert on recovering from childhood sexual abuse? You were invited to speak on the subject in conferences? And also, didn't you perform the play for a group of prosecutors from Manhattan DA's office?
I did, over at Robert Morgenthau's office. No, it was fascinating that I got called upon, but I don't know if this, Leonard, if the sense was as much power as I think when you grasp onto an inquiry, as I did with the tricky part, trying to understand what happened when I was a kid and, you know, moving toward a kind of freedom as an adult, I think more than a sense of power, it's at times tasting and feeling a sense of liberation that by understanding what's inside, it's like the past goes from gripping you to you being really in the present. And I think if I were to call it power, I guess it'd be more a sense of freedom and presence the more you answer these questions from your past.
The tricky part centered on one particular incident from your childhood, but All the Rage has several different stories, seemingly unrelated. Did that make it more difficult to put together as a theater piece?
You know, it did. It's a really, really good question. The piece talks a lot about fractured. What is it to be fractured and what is it to feel whole? And one of the central images is about the continents fracturing and then the notion of Pangaea, the continents being whole. I think that in that way, the structure of the play mirrored a sense of fracturing. There were all these pieces of stories, but underneath, somewhere, subconsciously, and Seth Barish, my wonderful director, helped me greatly to find a kind of inner engine to where all these fractured pieces wove together.
Whose idea was it to set up the stage like a classroom with a blackboard, a desk, an opaque projector, a globe, maps?
This came out of meetings with our wonderful, wonderful designer, Mark Wendland. He's one of the great designers in our city. He's done many, many things on Broadway. But when Seth and Mark got together and me, sparks began to fly. And Mark, as a designer and thinking visually, and dramaturgically, Mark was an enormous help to structuring, helping us talk about how to structure the piece and give it a physical life. Because I spent sitting 80% of the time on a stool. This I'm flying around the stage, and it's felt like it wanted to be fun, like entertainment. You know, the show is filled with a lot of laughs and a lot of fun. And Mark Wendland and Seth Barish and myself, and then our other designers got in, Russell Ciampa, our lighting guy, through that alchemy of the group talking, the play took off into this much more physical place where it became a kind of classroom, but also this series of maps, these pieces of the continents and subway maps, and to piece them all together. And Mark was an enormous help with that.
Now, you have another career as an actor in other things. You were in Spamalot, for example.
Yeah.
In between these two. How different is it when you're performing the words that you've written on a set that you have collaborated on developing and just doing a role in somebody else's play?
Well, it differs greatly. I must admit, I feel incredibly, you know, sort of profoundly vulnerable and exposed always when acting, but profoundly so when it involves ideas and language and a spiritual quest, in a sense, that I've excavated from my own being. And that's what the tricky part felt like. That's certainly what All the Rage feels like. And that's scary. I do feel fear and nerves and exposure in plays, and I love being in plays, of course, and being able to say, oh, look, there's somebody else's eyes, and talk to them and talk to other actors on stage. In this case, my scene partner is brand new every night. It's the audience, and you meet them in the first seconds. So I love both, and both have a great deal to do with being present, but I feel much more exposed in this venue, this form.
My guest is Martin Moran, whose latest show is All the Rage, which is at the Peter J. Sharp Theater on West 42nd Street. Limited run just till February 24th.
Yeah.
You begin the show by talking about getting into an argument with your stepmother at your father's funeral.
Yeah.
In Las Vegas.
Yes.
What happened?
Well, I think we all have a family member, perhaps, or as we were chatting, but I feel great tenderness toward this woman now who's since left. I do. She's since died. And part of the story is coming to feel a great sense of tenderness.
Because you point out that she seemed to have to be hostile to you from the moment you met.
Right. And
although,
how
responsible were you for that?
Oh, terrifically complicit in that. I felt terrifically hostile from the second I saw her. And, of course, I was 17 years old and she was marrying my father and there were all these elements. But the thing that interested me about tackling the question of my father's wife is that she's the first person that I tangled with the sense that I felt hatred, and that frightened me. And I thought, what is it? You know, here it is, St. Valentine's Day. But, you know, I mean, I say that because I grew up in a very Catholic milieu, and this sense of, you know, tenderness and brotherhood and Christianity or whatever that is. I hated this woman. I mean, I couldn't reconcile that she was going to be with my dad. So that's where I start the show, and it's very personal. And
she was also openly homophobic, which couldn't have made the situation any better. You were aware that you were gay at this point?
Yes and no. In that classic sense of, you know, pre-Will and Grace life back there in what seems like the, you know, 19th century, there I was in 1970, mid-1970s, very, very closeted and very, you know, hyper-aware of my body at 17 years old and my crush on all the basketball players at school. And she was smart, and she kind of pinpointed it, and she knew, and that's, I think, partly why I felt so uncomfortable around her. But it's just the inciting incident of the show. It's a very small part of the show, but it's a very explosive part of the show. And
you also tell the story of your younger brother, who seems to have been a very angry person.
Yes, he was many, you know, as we all are. He was a very, very complex guy. But he was the one in our family who we worried about, and he was angry. He had a lot of strikes against him. You know, he had diabetes from a very early age. He was adopted. He was a sweetheart, and he was also just enraged a lot of the time. And the thing that I discover about my brother is how thoughtful and how tender he was, and I discovered it in his writing, in his notebooks. And it's one of the things that happens in the show is it's this thing that we all have so many pieces, but I do focus on his anger. At certain
Well, at
point.
The center of the show, your experience is serving as a translator for an African refugee, a mm-hmm. torture victim seeking asylum in the U.S.
Yeah.
How did you get involved with that?
A friend of mine, Dr. Sarah Kahn, worked at a place called the International Institute, and I was longing to find a way to find meaning, you know, that sort of midlife sense of what's, you know, where can I find meaning? And she said, I was thinking I wanted to go to be in the Peace Corps or go to Doctors Without Borders. And she said, you can help right here by being an interpreter. And I met this man from Central Africa who was a torture survivor. And that's where my question of anger also rose up, because I thought, how could this man who's been so deeply hurt, where's his anger and who is he and how do we move on in life? So I met this amazing guy from Chad, and we're still friends to this day. And it was incredibly inspiring to talk to somebody who'd been through something like that, and not to compare my experience at all, but that we all as human beings, we have these experiences of being cleaved. And how do we move on?
You are donating the proceeds from two of the performances to the Refugee and Immigrant Fund.
Yes.
The next one this coming Sunday?
Yes, at 7 o'clock this Sunday, this wonderful organization that helps asylum seekers in our area. And they run, most specifically, in addition to everything else, they run two farms in the area to help asylum seekers have very practical work and help them also with asylum seeking. And it's a wonderful organization.
Now, you also talk about a trip you took to South Africa. We can't get into it. We've pretty much run out of time. But the show runs until February 24th at the Peter J. Sharp Theater, 416 West 42nd Street. Yeah. What are you doing after this? Did you have to close at that time?
Well, we do. The space is being used. It's that beautiful space upstairs at Playwrights Horizons. It's a wonderful theater, and there's something else moving in right away. We hope to continue the show in some way. I have no clue at the moment, and the old adage of, you know, the actor's life for me, I have not a clue what's next after the 24th. I'm entirely unemployed. So, hello, world.
Well, I heard that you were working on a screenplay for the tricky part.
I have been on and off. In fact, yeah, and Mike Nichols has been somebody who's been very supportive in that. He happened to come to the show last night. It was wonderful to see him, and that got me thinking. I've struggled with writing that. I'm not sure how to write a film, and it seems this first-person memoir and being storyteller comes more easily to me. But I do still hope to tackle that and to move The Tricky Part and perhaps All the Rage into a filmic form.
And you can see All the Rage until February 24th. Ticket information on our show page at WNYC.org. We got a call from a listener who said he saw the show last night and loved it.
Oh, thanks.
And thank you so much for being on our show again, Martin Moran.
Such a pleasure. Thanks, Mr. Lopate. Happy Valentine's Day.